Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC 275, Glover Teixeira versus Jiří Procházka for the UFC light heavyweight title, as well as Valentina Shevchenko defending her flyweight title versus Talia Santos. This is a jam-packed card from Singapore. Man, I'm really excited to be overseas traveling and two title fights and, of course, breaking them down with you, TB.
Hey, man, this is the dream and we're living it, dude. Here we are. We're back at the pay-per-view, man. You got the late start time, even out in Singapore, so that's nice, you know.
With the early start time.
Yeah. So, look at us. Here we are. So, you know, I'm just excited to get it going as we get into a card here where, you know, it might be smelling some underdogs coming around here. It's going to be fun. Guru's looking for a place to mark his territory. So, without further ado, let's get right down into breaking down UFC 275. Here we are with our stats and kicking off the card, in the main event of the evening for the light heavyweight title. We have Glover Teixeira versus Jiří Procházka. This fight is going to be explosive, dynamite. No matter what happens here on either side, someone's going to be getting a finish here. So I'm just excited to see what happens.
I was going to say, without probably jinxing it, right? Like, I do think I really don't feel like this is one of those fights where it's gonna be the Santos Ankalaev type situation where people think that it's gonna be a finish and it doesn't happen. I really do think this is more of the Oliveira Gaethje where people think that there's gonna be a finish and there damn well will be one.
Yeah, looking back and watching some tape, you know, you can see some tendencies on either side that maybe lead you to believe that there's going to be a finish. But, you know, guys, I might have alluded to, you know, smelling some underdogs here, you know, in this fight. The holder of the belt, the title holder, Glover Teixeira, +170 versus the challenger, Jiří Procházka, -200. Guys, something's a little fishy here because you see a Jiří Procházka in way too many of his fights. He's just giving up those hips. I mean, you see it in his latest fight against Dom Reyes. You see it against Carl Albrechtsen, in a fight that he ends up winning. But, I mean, you see it against King Mo. Before he gets knocked out on the feet, he's given up some top control. You see it, not against Volkan Oezdemir because that's not really his game. But, it's just something that you see over and over against anyone that's willing to commit to the game plan. It's just Jiří, he's very athletic, very tough to hold down. Very explosive. So, you know, Reyes gets him in a bad position. He's able to kind of just burst out from under it as Reyes is going to transition, you know, into side control. So eventually what happens, I think, here is, we're going to see the classic, you know, Jiří's going to come out. I think he might be a little bit more on the back foot here, trying to avoid the takedowns. But, I mean, Glover is just relentless. He has so much pressure and pace on the front foot. He's got great cardio. He works to the body with his boxing. You know, the head movement, he has incorporated more of it, but he is going to take shots. So the question is it Anthony Rumble Johnson all over again?
Yeah, I mean, that Rumble Johnson KO was crazy. When I saw that fight, I didn't even really realize what I was watching. I was so new to the UFC at that point in time, which is so funny you brought that up. But in this fight, man, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. One of the ways that I definitely see it is Jiří Procházka was an underdog in his first two UFC fights, right? Now we're paying a premium on him. Why? Because he's facing off against a 42-year-old. Like, that to me is narrative. And on this show, we fade narratives. At least to the best of our ability, you know, to not get caught up in them like everybody else sometimes tend to. But, you know, Glover is a beast, and we say that styles make fights, and I think this is a tough stylistic matchup for Jiří. And, you know, you hear, maybe too much narrative, but you showed me something on Twitter with Henry Cejudo talking. I posted that on my Twitter. Man, if your coach or working with your coach is like, man, I kind of wish he would have used some more wrestling, I don't think that was a troll. You know, of course, Henry Cejudo can be the biggest troll ever, but when you hear the way he was saying it, he wasn't trolling. More about this fight, though. I think despite maybe the that's where you right, and that's where people are on the favorite side. You know, he's younger, he's taller, he's got 4 inches of reach. I mean, for all these reasons, generally speaking, you know, you have a guy wins more often than not. But that's the reason everybody was fading Glover against Jan Blachowicz too, and he had the holes in his grappling game since day one too. It didn't stop everybody from betting him as a favorite, and I'm not sure it's stopping anybody from betting Jiří as a favorite here. I think if you're betting Jiří, you are damn sure you might as well be betting by knockout, right?
There's really no other thing to do.
He's not submitting Glover, and if you think he's gonna outpoint him, like I don't even that's not an option. So to me, when you're even handicapping fights, Jordan, you generally don't want to bet on the quote unquote more one track single play fighter that has, you know, a less dynamic way to win. And Glover could get the ground and pound. That wouldn't necessarily surprise me. It would crush my big bet that we have, but you know, it's still more plausible than I think Jiří by submission, for example. So I think if you're playing this fight, you find which way you want to hedge and you go under. However, right, we were talking a little sketchy about it earlier. I don't know. I think maybe we go, not that we're gonna bet it, but I kind of like the over 1.5 as opposed to that under 1.5.
Yes.
Right? Because, you know, you don't really remember it because of the epic fashion in which Jiří knocked out both Dominic Reyes and Volkan Ozdemir. But, I mean, I guess the Ozdemir one happened, and it's still in the second round. But, you know, first minute of that second round, and then the Reyes fight obviously happens very late in that second round. Mm-hmm. So
I get your point, and this is just kind of like a new principle that we're trying to like stick with, is that we've been burned in the past where like we think that a fight's going to end inside the distance, but we're like, oh, but it's going to last like X amount of period of time. It's like, if you think that the fight might end inside the distance, I don't think it, you know, that we can like responsibly play any over. But if I was to say, like, I really am not rushing to play the under 1.5, even at +100, just because Glover Teixeira's finishes have really come after he's worn them out or put, you know, a little bit of pace and pressure on them. And you know, it happened quick against Jan. It seemed like he gave up a little bit, but you know, then overall, you know, I really just think Glover Teixeira at +170, I'm probably going to find a way to get some money on that. But my real plays of interest where I think you get some real juicy value, you know, Glover Teixeira by submission at +350. When you look at the most likely way that he's going to win this fight, you get 3.5 to 1 on it. And then also, you know, maybe not the most value, but just fight to end inside the distance, fight not to go the distance is -500. I think that there's still like inherent value in that, just because I think
it's gonna happen
9.5 times out of 10 this fight doesn't go the distance. So
yeah,
I mean, hey, listen, Mac, we did see Glover Teixeira at CFFC.
We did. That's so true.
Yeah,
we did. So, I totally fist bumped. I think you were recording, and yes. I totally fist bumped Glover Teixeira. And Mac is proof of that. That is totally true. And we saw Aljamain Sterling from a far away
point.
And we totally talked to John Morgan, which was awesome. But shout out Mac, bro.
Yeah,
and Daz Files always.
And Daz got Glover by sub at +600. Damn, son.
That sounds like a bet online line or something. That's
Yeah, he got in on that value early. I think, you know, right now it sits +350. I think I caught maybe
+430.
What did I get early in the week?
I thought we got +430, didn't we?
I mean, I know that we might have bet, but it hasn't been posted on our BetMMA. So that's the thing.
All right.
Well, so it's not that, you know, we put that play out officially, but early in the week, if you are following
+430. We got that at +430. You texted me that. I woke up to that. I woke up to that that morning. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I've been looking, you know, that was something that I was thinking about. And, you know, plus 430, yeah, I already threw down 1.5 of units myself on so, that play.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that play as well. I don't think this fight goes the distance. I want to go one step further. FanDuel offers both of these options on this fight. It's the same line. It's either fight to end in rounds 1, 2, or 3, or similarly, inversely, fight not to start round 4. The line is at -260. So just check your book depending on the verbiage. I'm looking to parlay that because I'm crazy, I guess. But yeah, I honestly think minus just like TB's saying, is there a chance that Glover's grappling on the ground? Maybe he doesn't submit him and his jiu-jitsu is good enough, and maybe there's just some grinding on in the clinch, and we somehow get to championship rounds. Maybe, but I still think the percentage of that is you know, less than -260, meaning I think that there's value. So I'm going to take that.
Okay. Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, as we get to maybe not the next fight, but the one after, I think we got a little parlay piece coming up. So
yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking to parlay it to.
Yeah, so without further ado, we move on to our next fight here. We got another champion, Valentina Shevchenko, who's been just running roughshod through the division ever since she won the belt at the inception of the flyweight division. Now, I think she's facing, you know, maybe not, as we'll talk about, maybe not the most credentialed overall opponent as far as, like, who they've faced so far in the UFC. But Tyler Santos, at least physically, I think matches up better than anyone so far that Shevchenko has faced. Now, the question is, ultimately, I know, you know, you see the line and you're like, oh, you know, Shevchenko right now, I mean, she's listed at a -630 with Santos at +450.
-720 on FanDuel, +450 on, yeah, FanDuel. That's crazy.
So it's like, yeah, there is a little more value on Shevchenko this time around as opposed to some of her last few opponents. Like, I think, what was she, -1,000 or something against Lauren Murphy? Mm. But it did, I mean, it goes into round 4. I know Murphy's a bit durable and all that, but, you know, Shevchenko, for everything it's worth, she is someone that's willing to, like, play on the outside and use her grappling and control to dictate the pace and just kind of smother and wear down her opponents. So, yeah, we've seen the big knockouts, but we've also seen the Liz Carmouche fight. It makes me pause, and, you know, Tyler Santos, it's very hard to trust someone that lost a decision to Mara Romero Barella.
Right. Like, that's so scary. I mean, listen, right, you can't win every fight, and she learned from it, and it's a split, mm-hmm. and whatever, but that's super sketchy, man. And I kind of like what you were saying in terms of, oh, she's a great, you know, physical matchup versus Valentina. She's been running roughshod of the division. Exactly. That's why she's here, right? We all have to agree, right? Before we even handicap this fight, we have to agree that Talia Santos is here as like not a merit-based championship title fight. Like, we just have to accept that. Like, if we can all come to that agreement, then we can continue handicapping.
But there's
fight.
Like one reason that we talked about yesterday, actually, and it's because you didn't face Chookagian, right?
Right. I mean,
Chookagian, that's really it. That's,
yeah. I mean, you could see whatever matchups you want or whatever, but yeah, I mean, Grasso maybe, but yeah, Chookagian is the one, because she's been, I don't want to say gatekeeper, because I feel like that means inherently top 5, top 10, whatever, but she is the one that has been, you know, right under, and by right under, I mean right under, but right under, and I did that meaning significantly for anybody that's listening audio. You know, she's been right under, she's been, you know, Valentina's number 2, you know, for a while now. So for Talia to get here without fighting her, right? And the question that gets raised is, okay, well, why didn't they make that fight? Well, there's no upside to making that fight, because if Chookagian wins, you've just killed your contender, and now you kind of like have to book Chookagian Shevchenko too, which nobody's clamoring for, probably not even Chookagian. She's happy to fight Manon Fiore and make money, whatever, stay active. And you know what I mean? And now you don't, and you don't get to book Talia Santos here, which now we're all talking about. So now here you have fresh blood in the title picture, which is what you're looking for. Yeah. Does she have the capabilities to steal a round, steal two? Maybe. Sure. Well, I'll go with yes. I'll go crazy. I'll go, yeah. Is she going to steal three? Is she going to finish her? Is she going to steal four? Is she going to dominantly beat the champ? Come on. I don't see it. And yeah. I think we all have, and it's rightful as we should. I think we have a little bit of trepidation from Amanda Nunes, you know, and that's fair. I think being more skeptical of these big favorites is something that we should do as bettors. You know, I just think it's finding the time. You know, you look at a -720 price tag and you almost get sketched out. You're like, that's a big number. It's 87.8% implied probability. If you're sure she wins 9 times out of 10, there's technically money to be made here. So I
don't know.
I think it's probably closer to eight. I think it's probably closer to 85%. Or, you know, or right here, 88%. She probably wins most of the time.
I totally get that. I do. And that's where I'm not rushing to, like, play the money line here. Just
not at all.
I don't, like we basically said, it's about where you'd expect. But if you're on the Santos side, or if you even think she has a shadow of a chance to win, I mean, that +450, that's everything you need to know right there. And I mean, I just can't envision like a finish. I do think Shevchenko is special in that regard. So if you're on the Santos side, it's a Santos by decision at +1,000. Yeah, I mean, you'd hope that she's able to like put a pace on and get a finish. But ultimately, I think Shevchenko, she probably does get the decision at +100. You know, it is nice to still see plus value. I see some like inside the distance because Santos does come forward a bunch. She will eat some strikes, but one thing that you notice about Shevchenko is that when she's facing an opponent that is dangerous and has some power, she's going to stay on that back foot and stay out of, you know, real straight. This is going to be a low volume affair if it stays on the feet. Where I think that Santos has a chance is imposing her will in the grappling, potentially. Shevchenko is so strong. We've seen her just take other, you know, strong opponents. You know, here's the guy over here that took Andrade when they matched up. And, you know, there's some inherent bias there. It's like, have I been trying to fade Shevchenko? So I'm willing to sit out this one. I think that there's a lot of chasing that Juliana Pena glory in taking Tyler Santos this time out. I think I'd be more interested in what happens in the Manon Fiorot and Chukagian fight and
yeah,
seeing if Manon Fiorot could be that type of, you know, threat. But as I spoke about before, I just don't think the overall striking game is diverse enough. So
no,
yeah, ultimately here, so Santos, it's just over 3.5 -160. I think that there's a ton of value there. Because even
that's what I was going to ask. Because the fight to start round four is -180, and it not to start round four is +128, or to start round five, -142, to not start round five, +102. I mean, like,
I think it goes.
So my question though is, do you actually think that it gets to championship rounds?
Yes.
Do you feel more confidently there? Okay. So then my play is Valentina Shevchenko round 4-5 decision -135. That's FanDuel.
All right. And if we look at the famous chronic Draft combat game. Fight parlays, you got Shevchenko and over 2.5 is -200. Shevchenko and over 3.5 is -150. So there is some value there, it sounds like, on FanDuel.
If
that's the way they're
looking. I definitely, and I like it. And you're getting the extra half round as well.
Yeah, I do think, if anything, Shevchenko probably wins by decision. But if you can cover yourself on the late finish in the championship rounds, as you're saying, that is where I would see a finish happening. Because I think Santos has proven to have good cardio and good staying power. The real question is, how does she hold up? So,
you know, it's just, we're going to find out. One of the things that, we'll move on, though. One of the things that does stick out of my mind sorely, unfortunately, is like the Andrade-Lemos fight. Where, you know, we're on Andrade for sure, no problem. But we're like, oh, you know, this, that, and the other. We'll make it to round two, you know, but then maybe there'll be a finish. But maybe it most likely be a decision. She finished her in 2 minutes with the standing arm triangle. Like, it was so unfortunate for the over 1.5 better or whatever. Like, so, you know, not that Lemos is Santos, but you would just hate to puff somebody up just because they're in a spot. Well, and that's then the thing, is come out and they don't do it.
I thought Andrade was going to get a finish, but I thought Lemos would like convincingly win round one potentially. That just never came to fruition, and she never earned any respect.
Nothing.
But Santos, I just think it's different in that she's facing, like, Andrade is someone that comes forward and forces the pressure. Like, I don't think Shevchenko is going to be rushing into the fire immediately.
No, not at all.
I think she's going to be measuring the distance and kind of like just keeping her pace and outpointing her, at least in the early going. I don't envision Shevchenko getting a finish the majority of the time here. I think in the past, she's been able to kind of use, you know, her strength to outposition, get to the crucifix, whether it's Chookagian or Andrade, or she gets the Jessica Eye, you know, bulletproof knockout. But I don't see either of those specific scenarios happening. And in that case, it could just be the Liz Carmouche guard, you know, hump fest, you know, it could be.
Yeah. So I kind of like that 4-5 decision play on FanDuel.
Well, let's go. Here we go. We got Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
The rematch.
The rematch. So I'm still
pissed it's not 5 rounds.
Terrible.
If that kind of gives you a little hint as to what our play might be when you start talking like that.
Ooh.
You know, you want to see more of this fight. You expect to see plenty of this fight. Joanna has taken 2 years off. Some would argue in her prime to take those 2 years off. Maybe a little after prime at 34, but you know, but was, you know, considered, you know, top of the world, top of the food chain.
Her,
you know,
frontal lobe thanks her for the time taken off, for sure.
For sure. She went full Megamind. Really, really, really crazy. Like, again, we'd watch that fight. That was right before COVID. And, you know, I remember we watched all those fights live, and oh my God, we were all fucking buzzing. We were freaking out. And it was just an incredible, incredible time. And we're like, how can this next fight get any better? and then it was Izzy and Yoel, and it was one of the worst fights of all time. And we're like, wow.
Yeah, what terrible. A letdown. But the only this letdown, fight, as you said, the only letdown here is that it's not 5 rounds again. But I think that's where we find our value, because, listen, I mean, Zhang Weili now at -172 and Joanna at +134. There is the a huge, woman. Huge discrepancy in where the line is now compared to where it should be. I totally see a reason for, you know, if you want to take the Joanna side, like, I get it. I do. I'm just not going to do it, because I don't think that this first fight plays out the same way that the second fight plays out the same way that the first fight did. I think you've seen Zhang Weili kind of commit to a little bit of a more diversified game plan since, I mean, it's only one fight, but we've seen her use her wrestling in the past as well. And now just like having the focus and the attention on, hey, you know, I can't just stand at distance and eat all this damage. You know, I need to change levels. I need to push a different type of game plan here. You know, we saw her have a lot of success against Rose. Now in her career, she's landed 10 out of 32 total takedowns, whereas Joanna's faced 130 and been taken down 24 times. So yeah, it translates to an 82%, but it seems like her opponents that are physically strong enough to like actually commit and follow through on a takedown have actually been able to use that to control her. For example, Shevchenko, I don't think Weili is as big or as strong, but I think you're looking at the same type of athleticism overall. Rose able to land a few takedowns and do some things as Joanna in that regard. Claudia Gadelha in both their fights. You know, it was even super close in one of them. You could argue either way. But ultimately, there is a path to victory for Weili besides just standing at distance and trying to finish Joanna with power, which didn't go so well the first time. I see some wrestling happening here. I'm going to take Zhang Weili as my pick. I'm avoiding the -172 on the money line, because I think the place that you get the best value overall is just saying that this fight's going to go the distance. I mean, was that -225? I think it could be a price up to like a -500 in the same sense that you have the main event not going the distance. I think it's like as sure of a thing. You're just getting that much better of a price as a parlay piece.
Yeah, I really, really, really tough to disagree with anything you said. I guess I'll just, you know, get to the same destination from a different route. You know, you look back at the first fight, and, you know, we were on Weili Zhang there, and boy, were we white knuckling those tickets, man. Really, really tough, really, really close. We had felt kind of, you know, that she had won round five, but man, was that tough and close. And way too close. But drum roll, we got her at plus money. Money line was plus money. And even still, it was like coin flip plus money. Like it was plus 110, plus 105. You know, Joanna was, I don't like, these were not wide lines. They were very, very close to even lines. And now you have, you know, Welly Zhang, who's been active, and Joanna, who hasn't been. And the line has, you know, flipped, but maybe too much so. You know, minus 170, plus 140. Like, it's become steep. And while I do, I think that Welly Zhang wins, I am more confident that it goes to the decision. And what I'm most confident in is that if it goes to the decision, I want no fucking part of it, because the judges are nuts. They're nuts. That I'm sure of. I'm sure that they're nuts. So I don't want to be holding the right ticket for the wrong reasons, the wrong ticket for the right reason. Let it go the distance. And if somebody gets a finish, like, that's nuts to me. I mean, I've been a little trepidatious, you know, but I think the finish would be on the Welly Zhang side anyway. But, you know, who finishes Joanna? Just Rose on a bad weight cut.
That's it. Yeah. And you know, I think that she's found a healthier approach at this point. Looks in great shape as always, and I think she's ready to go. So, yeah, I mean, pretty
simple. My big play, by the way. So, yeah.
So that's it, right?
That wasn't clear. Yeah. So, minus 220 on DraftKings, on FanDuel. Sorry, the fight doesn't go minus 220. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Welly Zhang, fight goes a distance, parlayed with, you know, fight, doesn't start round four, or fight to end in round one, two, or three in the main event at minus 260. Minus 220, minus 260 together, plus 101. Let's go.
Bam. And we're looking at about three units on that, right? We're going to have to throw that down?
Yes, we are.
All right. So, I mean, hey, Guru, if you're feeling ambitious, you can do that as I start queuing up this next fight here, because we got a banger alert coming up in this next one. We got Manel Cop versus Rogério Bonsarin.
I'm a motherfucking star boy.
We got the star boy. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this one. This is kind of the tale of the striker versus the grappler. Very much so excited to see, you know, which guy is going to win out here. But I think the line kind of tells the story of how it is going to go. Manel Cop right now, you know, it's minus 235. Bonsarin is at plus 190. I think what we've seen with Bonsarin in the past is his strength and ability to kind of close off the cage with his power and use that to close the distance. And then just, I mean, when he gets his two hands, you know, enclosed behind you on that double leg, there's no getting out of it. But ultimately with his top control, it's not like he's dealing out that much damage overall. So I think ultimately here, you know, even if Bonsarin is able to get Cop down early, he is going to wear out, and Cop's jiu-jitsu game is superior.
Yeah, it's actually really good. I think people underestimate, because he wore wrestling shoes in Ryzen, that his jiu-jitsu game is actually really good.
I would agree. So I just see Cop winning from distance and being able to piece him up. And I think it ends inside the distance, but I could totally see a world where Bonsarin gets enough control to survive, and Cop is just hurting him when he gets the chance. And, you know, I ultimately Cop money line at that minus 235. I do think that there's going to be something coming out here. I want to see the face off. You know, Cop had those concerns with, you know, popping off on the test there. So they had to cancel his last fight and move it to another jurisdiction that didn't mind that he had some metabolites.
Hey, relax, guy.
That is another interesting part.
Listen, that was super interesting. It was like picograms and pulsing, right? Like it was like a whole It was a whole thing that was really super duper interesting. I was more well versed when it actually came out. I kind of forgot it. But to your point, -235 on the money line, a 70% implied win probability. I do. I think that's fair. I think he wins 75% of the time. Like, let's go. Yeah, I think laying that is fair. You'll probably see that on BetMMA.
Yeah, that'll be one of our bigger straight plays. And right along with this next fight, as we get into it, you got Jack Della Maddalena, beautifully sung by Bisping during one of the fights. It was like Della La Maddalena. I was dying when I heard it. Versus Ramazan Amin. I think that ultimately this is going to be a showcase fight. Maddalena, 10 years younger. Yes, he is one of those contender series guys. But the type of skills that I saw from him and the cardio that was displayed in his contender series fight, I mean, he was someone that was expected to lose to Angelosa. And he comes out and the reversals he shows, the Granby rolls, what he does to get out of bad positions on the ground, you know, submission attempt, it's coming with the arm triangle, but he knows what to do. He stays calm and he's able to get out of it. I know he's been held down at points on the regional scene, but it's something I think that you've seen his improvement and just overall wherewithal on the ground improve all the way up through, you know, where he gets to now in the UFC. And in his first fight in the UFC, he kind of gets paired up with a guy that's willing to just keep it on the feet and box with him. And you see how that goes. Maddalena, just great defensive guard. And, you know, Amiv, what does he really do, Guru?
Dude,
what does he really do?
I hate to be too much of a hater. But if you're a friend of the show, you've been listening to the show, man, like, you know how much I am not a fan of Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. And if you're Ramazan Amiv and you'd be out here losing split decisions to Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts, you're not going to be on my good list. You're going to be on my naughty list.
Oh no.
And Ramazan Amiv, you are on my naughty list.
Because
listen, like, if you're going to wrestle, you have to. What's up, PC Sean Strickland? Thanks for coming in, buddy.
What's going on, dog?
Good to see you. If you're going to be a wrestler, man, you better have good top control. You better have good cardio and you better be raining down shots or submissions from top control. He doesn't do any, not one, not two, a mixture, a combo. He doesn't do any of those things. He has poor cardio. he has poor top control. And he hasn't got a single. It was really funny. Somebody on Twitter posted a thread of all his UFC finishes, and it was just like a little meme on the bottom. There's no UFC finishes. He's not doing it. So yes, do you want to test Jack Della Maddalena against a sick grappler with some striking credentials that's, like, you know, maybe able to test him and test his cardio, put him on his ass a little bit? Sure. This isn't the spot, though.
No.
Ramazan Amiv is 35. His best days are behind him. He's in one of the toughest divisions in the entire sport. And this kid has already shown, like, versus Angelosa, whatever, like, that he's athletic and can fight out of those positions at least decently enough. So you're gonna have to really hold this kid down. I think it could get sketchy, maybe even for that first round. So maybe if you're looking for a live betting situation, maybe Jack's the kind of guy for that. But he also is the kind of guy to take away your live betting opportunities like that with, you know, some kind of crazy knockout. Mm-hmm. So
ultimately, here we are. I mean, Ramazan Amiv, you look at his pace from distance, you look at his accuracy, you look at his takedown. He's only got 29% accuracy. And for a guy that, you know, you would expect if he's going to win the fight, he needs to do it with his grappling, he's only got a 27% control rate.
Bro, tell him what I told you about, like, the line whenever it had come out when I had texted you, whatever it was, a few weeks ago even.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were saying, like, oh, like, you know, I was looking ahead, like, oh, what lines might be interesting? I was like, okay, yeah, yeah. And we were talking about it. We were watching the last fight night, sitting there peeking at the lines. And we're like, oh, Della Maddalena, like, no, -120. And Guru's like, wait, that line seems weird. Why is the line so close? And then next thing you know, we regroup on it later in the week, and here we are. It's bam, like minus 160 now. We were lucky enough to catch it. We put down three units to win two. Dylan Maddalena straight up.
Yeah, he should get it done. Could be a little bit of sweat fest, but we're gambling here. What 4 ounce leather fist fight do you know that's not going to be a little bit of a sweat fest? But Jack should get it done.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, we're riding him home for a nice little payday here.
Oh, you want to ride him, all right?
Oh, jeez. next match loading up over here. We got Brendan Allen versus Jacob Malkoon.
That's this one.
Oh wow, look at you. Water sucks. No, just kidding.
Got a little H2O.
Brendan Allen. He's got a big athletic advantage here from just, you know, height, 5 inches, reach, 2 inches. You know, he's same age as Malkoon, but he's got 5 more UFC fights. And, you know, he's got 5 career losses, but 23 total fights compared to 7 for Malkoon. But Malkoon, you know, he's shown proficient offensive wrestling when he's not getting knocked out inside 20 seconds against, you know, our boy Phil Hawes. So, is that the case of Octagon jitters in this first matchup? Because you see him get hurt in his last fight against AJ Dobson, and Jacob Malkoon is able to get to his wrestling and really settle in as the fight goes on and just put out a pace. I mean, you see 6.93 takedowns per 15 at 35%. That's a real grinding pace for Malkoon. And Brendan Allen has never really been someone to push an overall wrestling pace. The times that we've seen him do it, I mean, against Kyle Daukaus, that third round got real sketchy there. I mean, Brendan Allen, and the times we've seen him on the feet from distance, anytime he's really gotten tagged and touched consistently, he just kind of withers and fades over time. So, I mean,
maybe he needs some more H2O for that withering.
What are you thinking about this spot here?
So it's the first time we're going to bring it up, and I'm not sure if we should have brought it up for the last fight, but I know I'm going to bring it up for this fight, and I know we're going to bring it up later.
Yes.
Jacob Malkoon lives in Australia, guys. So we're going to do a quick little geography lesson, right? Okay. Jacob Malkoon lives in Australia, trains in Australia, Robert Whittaker. Cool. So Singapore is also on that side of the world. Feels like for us, 7,000-8,000 miles, literally directly the other side of the world. For Jacob Malkoon, not too bad. A few hour flight. Brendan Allen lives here with us. So,
hey Brendan.
Not that TB's a professional athlete, but TB, how is your 6-hour time zone change for you? Had a week, you know, no fight schedule, nothing like that. How was that for you?
It was pretty brutal flying out, you know, Amsterdam. You know, it's like you sit on the plane for 8 hours, you get there, it's a completely different time of day than what you were expecting. Like normally, you know, when we were dealing with Fight Island, we would be bringing this up, you know, kind of about the travel and stuff. And here we are again, but even further across the world in Singapore. How long has Brendan Allen even been out there for? I mean, so the line -305 for Brendan Allen and Jacob Malkoon +240. Are you laying Brendan Allen?
So that's what I'm saying. So I don't know if I'm laying that line in the Vegas apex. Like, I don't know that I'm, so let alone to lay that in Singapore. No way. This is dog or pass to me. Because if you're telling me that he's got clear grappling holes, which, you know, at 30, how is that not a typo? Does that say 37% takedown defense?
He's been taken down 5 times out of 8 total takedowns faced.
What the fuck? How is that? It's horrible.
Because he's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's not really.
Okay, so, but now he's going to face his first spam wrestler?
Yeah, I mean, Malkoon, 14 out of 40 in 3 fights, and one of those didn't have any.
So he's not. So he's never, he faced Pugliano Soriano, who's got the wrestling background, but we know he's very comfortable striking. He hasn't faced a wrestler. He lost to Chris Curtis, I meant, who, like, you know, again, has no problem mixing it up. But now he's got
fucking his first ever spam wrestler that you saw have dominant take top control over somebody who is even more explosive and strong and Abdulrazak Alhassan and AJ Dobson. Both guys are fucking meatheads compared to Brendan Allen. This is actually like a hosing. I don't even understand. I actually am so confused. I saw somebody say that Brendan Allen should be at like a minus 3,000 this week. Like, I don't. No.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about all that jazz. But I will say that Jacob Malkoon is looking rather tasty as one of those dogs that are barking this week. So
grandma's couch.
Yeah,
grandma's couch cushion. I don't know why I'm sniffing. I guess that's what dogs do. But I guess that's a dog dying, getting put to sleep. I don't know what that was either. That's his stomach growling. I guess he's hungry.
Starving. We gotta pick up the pace.
We gotta eat. We bet MMA, man. We gotta eat. Check out our page. No guests this week. You know, we're just kind of buckling down, focusing on these fights. We're back next week with a sick ass guest, though. Not for nothing. Sure you tune in. That's a sick ass card next week, but we're still halfway through this one. So I'm like, you know me with the ADD. I'm all over the place.
Yeah. That is for damn sure. So, Guru, let me reel you back in. We're moving.
Why doesn't Sungwoo Choi have any stats?
Oh, wait, because it's. I got you. I got you, Guru. Let's see. It's going to be. Oh, no. Yeah, they definitely should be in there, but this could be scary.
I'm so startled.
Oh, no.
Do we not have them? That's a problem.
It's not ideal. So, yeah, as I try to figure this out really quickly, we're going to get down into the breakdown because we got Sungwoo Choi at minus 260 and Josh Koulibal at plus 196. You saw Josh Koulibal in his last fight against Shayulan Nurdembeka, and Sungwoo Choi was in his last fight against Caceres. I think the pace and the grappling of Caceres just proved to be too much after that whole fiasco with the knockdown and everything. But Josh Koulibal, yeah, I mean, he did great against Nurdembeka after he gassed out trying to grapple him for a round.
Yeah, well, we'll use the word great like a little freely. He did, I guess that's, he did well enough. He was finally able to implement his game plan after Nurdembek. How do I pronounce, practice his name for his thing. Nurdembek?
Shayulan Nurdembeka.
Shayulan Nurdembeka. Like after that dude literally went for a million takedowns and got basically all of them. And, you know, then was tired against the fence and he was just completely zonked out after the first 4 minutes of round one. And then after that, he was able to kind of pull away and do work. You know, he's somebody to me that's looked super unimpressive throughout his UFC run. That being said, he's faced some, you know, relatively tough competition. You know, has to come in against Jalen Turner, who's an absolute fucking animal beast man. So that's a really, really tough out to come into. Gets knocked out round two, ground and pound. Then he's got the draw with Charles Jourdain, right? Where, you know, that fight was super fucking interesting with Jourdain getting the 10-8 in round three. After Koulibal was the one to gas and unable to continue to implement his game plan there. And like we said, then he faces Nurdembike, who's, you know, not very good. Good job getting those stats up, TB. What a savage. Clap it up.
Yeah, everybody. Clap it up, TB. Let's go.
So now that we can look at those stats, which I really do love, you can see that a lot of things are in Sungwoo Choi's favor. And maybe the biggest thing that isn't is the striking defense. Yeah, the striking defense would be the biggest thing that's not in Wu Choi's favor. You know, but that's fair. That's one of the things that we see on his tape. He stands very straight up and he doesn't have great head movement. And he prefers to counter strike. So when you like to counter strike,
yeah,
that means there's a strike coming back towards you. So you can get hit by those.
Yeah, I think, you know, it definitely hurts the stats to have faced Gavin Tucker and Evleyev, guys that make you really hesitant to do anything. And, you know, Choi spent a lot of time, you know, for a great kickboxer like he is.
Right.
He's only spent 49% of his fight time at distance because his opponents have controlled him 35%. But Josh Koulibaly is dealing with the same issues. He's, you know, he's only gotten taken down 2 times out of 15. But, you know, people are controlling him, whether it's, you know, Jalen Turner at moments or, you know, Shailan Nurtabeka or even Charles Jourdan. So now Koulibaly, a guy who's gotten 0 of 11 on takedowns in the UFC. I mean, Sang-woo Choi's got a better offensive wrestling game with 4 out of 7. Sang-woo Choi might be that guy that you go, ooh, minus 235. That's familiar. I think Manel Kopp was the same line. Is that a winning line this week? Because that could be, you know, if you don't want to take Kopp solo, which, you know, you're risking a lot more, if you put Kopp and Choi together, that could be a good little play there, minus 235 each. I think you're getting a little plus money. I think Guru might approve, you know?
So you know how I feel about that plus money plays. I'm just trying to figure out exactly where these guys are training. Yeah, so he's insane. So they're both training very well overseas. Koulibaly from Australia and Sung-woo Choi from South Korea. So neither of these guys will have necessarily the flight being as much of an issue as
plus 103 Guru. Plus 103
on plus 103 at what?
They're both they're both minus 235. So the parlay comes out to plus 103 for Manel Kopp and Sung-woo Choi.
Oh shit.
Is that a play?
We didn't even think about that. Why didn't we think about that?
I don't know.
I mean,
am I throwing that down? Like,
I know, because like, are we parlaying them or do we play them straight up? It's like that
is the question. So, but the problem here is that you already have minus 260 on Choi at FanDuel and Kopp is minus 250. So right now they're both minus 235 on DraftKings. So if there's any value to be had, it's at this very second because you're about to lose plus money on that parlay or the value on your straight bet overall. So it's kind of
right.
Like,
I mean, you could lay. I mean, we could if they're the same line.
I would put two units on.
I was gonna say you could weigh 2.4 units on both of them to win one, and as long as one hits, you break even. And if we're right on both, then
but you only win one unit, so then you lost 2.4.
But yeah, but you win on the other one. I guess not. No, I guess that's really stupid. Yeah. Oh no, that's really stupid. So let's not do that. Yeah. So I guess that's why people. I'm not good at math, everybody. I'm glad that's on the air for everybody here. No. Yeah. So you're right. I guess we should probably parlay basic gambling 101. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So we probably end up parlaying them. I kind of like that because I do. I kind of feel confident that they both win against their competition.
Yeah, I mean, you got double minus 235 at the moment. So if you want that value, Guru, I mean, we're talking two units here. Is that something that we can throw down? Because that doesn't, like we were kind of talking
about. Do we have to talk to the shark first to see if it's a winning line? Do-do. Do-do.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's a shark attack.
Yeah. Ask him. Wait, listen, just, hey, stay posted on that Bet MMA. Yeah. At Guru Scouting MMA, Twitter Verdict, Instagram Tapology, TB Scouting MMA, Twitter Verdict, Instagram Tapology. Make sure you're following us. Make sure you're subscribing. Like, guys, click that like button. Takes 2 seconds. Helps the algorithm. That's, you know, that's how the cool kids say it these days. You know, throw a comment down. Log on to your sister's YouTube. You know, like it from there too. Just whatever. You know, just
run, whatever run you got to do.
Just run up the numbers. Run it up, run it up, run it up, run it up, run it up.
Yeah, so that takes us to a fight that this is probably one of the first ones on this card that I don't have a ton of interest in getting too touchy-feely with it. I mean, Mahashata versus Steve Garcia, a couple guys that I think have, you know, really don't have too much to draw from experience-wise. I mean, Mahashata, we really only have
there's no tape.
Contender series tape because it's I couldn't find anything else myself.
The Lost Ark.
Some people are better than me out there, but I couldn't find it. And what I saw is that he's solid all around, but you know, I think it helped that his opponent completely guessed after a round on Contender Series. So And then Steve Garcia, I mean, he moves up a weight to face Pena, and now he stays up a weight, faces Ontiveros, gets knocked down twice in the first round, and relies on his wrestling the rest of the way. And yeah, he's got some solid wrestling and stuff like that, but like, is that really his game plan, or is Mahashata going to be able to hurt him? You know, right now you see the lines at -184 on Steve Garcia. Is Steve Garcia one of those guys that you could have really trusted? -184?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the problem and why you can't trust Steve Garcia is maybe his chin, right? I mean, he's lost a bunch, honestly, a little too much for my liking. He's got that split decision loss to Ricky Tercios, I find super interesting. You know, his chin, like you said, so Ontiveros was, you know, two weight classes above, cuts down, and then is huge in the cage. So maybe those knockdowns are like, you know, maybe a little circumstantial, because he's never been knocked out before. One submission loss and three decision losses. You know, the thing with his competition, though, is that it's fairly fraudulent. Like, he loses to a guy in his debut who's 0-1-1, beats a guy 10-12, beats a guy 0-0, beats a guy 0-2, beats a guy 10-15, beats a guy 0-2, and then welcome to Dana White Contender Series, where you fight a guy that's 7-0, you know. But even him, you know, the guys he's facing as it loads here on the Vancouver scene was 10-18-15, 14-26, 5-6, 4-3, 0-0, 2-4. You see what I'm saying? Sure, the guy's 7-0, but what? You're king of the tomato cans. Great. You know what that makes you? It's a tomato can. So, like, I think if Garcia goes out and, like, this could be his coming out party, so to speak. Like, this is a chance for him to supplant himself, because he showed, you know, I thought fairly good submission defense versus Luis Pena, who, you know, Violent Bob Ross, who, you know, is a fucking beast on the ground and honestly super fucking violent individual
in the streets.
Yeah, especially in the streets too. I hope, you know, hope he's all right getting his shit together.
What up, yeah, Ben the Bane Davis?
Oh, Ben Bane Davis, what's going on? Good to see you, buddy. Happy to see you. Yeah, so, you know, the other thing, you know, Steve Garcia is a Dana White Contender Series winner at bantamweight in season 3, and he didn't get the contract. So, you know, he's kind of been around the block a little bit, and I think that this could be his chance to get himself his key UFC victory. Because honestly, if he doesn't, I mean, bro, what does he have to his name? The win over Charles Ontiveros, which is nothing. Right. You know, he'll be finding his walking papers soon enough. Like, this is everything. So I think he can do it. That.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we gave that fight its fair.
Well, its fair do we deal. Have any thought in terms of a flight for Steve Garcia from Jackson Wink, New Mexico? I believe that's where he's training. When did he get to Singapore from the guy from China who's going to have a much easier flight? I assume that he's still at the PI in China.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's
those are the kind of questions. Those are the kind of questions that we'll take the next 2 days to continue to look at, and then those are the things that you also kind of see visually wear on the fighter on, you know, weigh-in day.
Exactly. So
yeah, Steve Garcia misses weight, I'd be fairly confident to tell you it had something to do with the flight and some trouble with that.
That's interesting. I like that idea, Guru.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day, TB.
Well, hey, let's hope you're right a second time here, because we got another fight coming up.
Somewhere found that funny.
Somebody you're doing your best, kid. I'm just like kind of immune to your like sidebars sometimes, I feel.
Somewhere, somehow, gonna make it around that right now.
Oh, baby. And, listen, guys, Guru always bringing you the tunes.
This is true.
But
he's not fighting Jacob Malkoon.
Yeah, no, I'm working on it. All
right, let's go.
Yeah, we got Andre Fialho versus Jake Matthews as we fix it. Yeah, here we go.
The Celtic kid who's no longer a kid.
Celtic.
He's like the Celtic man. Really? Celtic?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's obvious. Right? Celtic. I don't know.
It's okay.
Yeah, you're, probably.
We're all doing our best.
I mean, I'm just thinking of the finals that are on right now. Listen, anybody with us and not watching the finals right now, we love you.
God bless your heart. Because you are a true chronic combat connoisseur. I hope you guys, rip a ball, get a joint twisted up, do a little something, have some fun. Throw us a little like on this video. That never hurt anybody. But Andre Fialho, -140 versus Jake Matthews, now +120. This is a fight where, Andre Fialho, he fought April of this year. He fought May of this year, and here he is back in June of this year, and there's the Guru taking a nice little rippy. Hey, look at that, Effie, watching both, money on the Celtics. Let's go. Hey, we're hoping
that's my dog right there.
They should get it covered this first game, I'm hoping. So we appreciate you being here and having some fun with both. Ultimately here, you got a great matchup in Fialho making that weight cut again three times in 3 months against Jake Matthews, a guy that, is kind of coming off, one of those fights where he wants to get it back here. I mean, Sean Brady back in March of 21, that's the last time that we saw Jake Matthews, huh?
Get back to where you once belong. I'm sorry. I was stuck on the Beatles for that one. What does he want to get back?
Well, it's been since March of it's been over a year since we've seen Jake.
Oh,
Matthews,
get back,
right?
Get back to the Octagon. Yeah, definitely wants to get back to the Octagon. It has been a minute for him, hasn't it? Yeah. Oh my God, that flight with Sean Brady flew by. Holy macaroni.
Yeah, I can't believe Blachowicz, it's been that long.
Well, because you know what it was? He had the fight canceled with Jeremiah Wells.
Oh, that's right.
He was supposed to fight. That would have been so interesting. And Wells Cornerman tested positive for COVID. So that fight got not rebooked. He just took another 6 months off. I guess it must have been tough to find another matchup after Wells took a different route.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Fialho hasn't been afraid to face anybody, but
that's actually
kind of
interesting.
Fights,
what does that? You know what? Maybe I stumbled upon. Maybe it's a little bit of a high idea. But like, did I stumble upon something? Was Jake Matthews ready for a fight? And maybe people are like not looking to fight him, so he gets Andre Fialho here. Like, why is Jake Matthews taking this fight? Like, if he, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's also difficult for him to like come and
he
fight
gets to stay
over
active
in the Apex.
Yeah. That, see, there you go. And
so
that's what kind of leads
the
us to
the last time he fought was he was out in where was it, his last fight? That was
Blachowicz Adesanya 259. That was in the Apex during COVID.
Oh, it I was. Oh, okay.
And all before right, that, so and I before guess that, he was gonna fight on the Fon Aldo card, which was gonna be in the Apex, or which was in the Apex.
Interesting. All right, so that blows that right out of the water. But ultimately, I think
it still helps the idea of this fight, though. Yeah. Which is true that Andre Fialho, right? He's been training out of Sanford, so that's in California.
No, it's
right?
in Florida.
No, Florida. I always mix that up because I'm thinking, you know what it is? I think of Stanford, the school in the California college.
You're doing beautiful things, Guru.
Anyway, so so he's in Florida. The point is he's in the United States, man. Jake Matthews is in Australia. They're fighting in Singapore. He's got to fly all the way over there, man. That's tough.
Yeah. I'm curious if he, because Brendan Allen got out there. They're both out of the same camp. Brendan Allen got out there not too long ago, about like last week. So at least he got out there a little bit ahead of time. So
you
gotta
imagine. You can't not. You have to. It's part of the camp. You can't go out 3 days before. It's impossible.
Exactly. It seems like they were working together all the camp also. It looks like they have someone else.
Talking to Mike, handsome.
Sorry, it looks like they have someone else, actually the third part of their camp, Tuco300 on Instagram, Tuco Tacos.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, so anyway, he's going to be fighting on the Road to Singapore series, it seems.
Yes.
So that's he faced off. They have him like on their stories as like the trio taking over Singapore. So yeah, they've all been there together for at least a week. Good on them. Ultimately, though, Fialho, I just think he's running into someone that, just like Michel Pajeda, is going to be someone that's willing to switch up their game from just a boxing approach. You know, he was lucky enough to face Baeza, who's like, okay, let's just like box from distance. And, you know, I have no chin, so, you know, whatever. And Jake Matthews' flight was 8 hours long, and Andre Fialho's was 23 hours long. Thank you, right. Effie. That's exactly
the kind of thing we're talking about here. Yeah.
And
23-hour flight when you're concerned about your weight, when you're concerned about your exercise, when every hour leading up to your fight is so crucial. You know how much, TB, you're half a scientist. How much water does your fucking body retain while in the air at altitude? Like,
I'm not that big a scientist.
All right, he's only a quarter of a scientist, not half a scientist. But like that kind of idea has to be. And they lost Joanna's luggage, and they lost Mike Brown's luggage too.
Wow.
So that, yeah, like super not cool stuff for team Alpha Male over there and whatever. And just people in general trying to fly from America to Singapore. That's tough. It's a tough thing to do and go fight. Yeah, TB was there on the luxurious vacation. It was tough. And it was not even as far.
Yeah, but the other thing is that it's not even just, oh, he has to fly a far distance or anything like that. Like, he's facing a guy in Jake Matthews where his striking defense from distance is 71%. Yeah. So if Andre Fialho is looking for that knockout and that knockout early, like he has been in his victories in the UFC, you know, Jake Matthews isn't going to make that easy. I do think that, you know, if he gasses out, that there is potential for, you know, something to happen a little bit earlier in his career. I mean, we're talking six, seven years ago. He did have a couple early finish losses, but I think that's just the growing pains of being a 19-year-old making his debut in the UFC and facing guys like James Vick and Kevin Lee.
Yeah.
Even Anthony Rocco Martin and Sean Brady, you know, we're talking about guys that, you know, were flirting with the top 15 or are in the top 15 at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, when you look at this, though, and this is the thing that really makes you stand out, other than the striking defense, which I think from Jake Matthews is super impressive. Andre Fialho, sure, he's got a 75% takedown defense. He's been taken down once on 4 attempts. That's great. Across for Jake Matthews, across 15 total UFC fights, he's attempted 53 takedowns. That's attempting 3.5 per fight. So you're telling me that Andre Fialho has a chance to face as many takedowns as he's faced in his entire career during this fight. And Jake Matthews lands about 2 of them. So he's going to land about half the takedowns he goes for. What happens if Jake Matthews gets on top of Andre Fialho?
Oh, what is that? A 30% control rate?
Oh, is that what that says? Is that little green number on the bottom there? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if if you're not watching, you should be watching, looking at these amazing stats that TB pours over week in and week out. But these stats, man, are, I mean, I don't want to brag, but they're pretty fucking elite. So you look at these stats and you see that beautiful green 30% control rate. Yeah, that's true. The Jake Matthews last win being Diego Sanchez is weak. And then Emil Weber weak. And that's the truth. That you do wonder how legit Jake Matthews is. You know, you've seen Andre Fialho at least beat, right? So that's the thing, though. You want to say that Andre Fialho has beaten somewhat proven commodities, but has he? Cameron Van Camp, and Miguel Baeza. So Miguel Baeza is somebody that we all had up here, but that stock has lowered significantly, part and parcel to the loss to Fialho. But you know, these things have to equate to something. At the end of the day, if Andre Fajardo wins, it's the way we all know he wins. He's going to knock him out. But unless you're betting him by knockout, I think you got to be on Jake Matthews.
I totally agree with that. Completely understand. And that's why we have one unit out on Jake Matthews at plus 125. And that's maybe why we don't have more than one unit out, is it's just like...
Right, and again, and if you think I'm being dramatic, Andre Fajardo has 13 wins by knockout, 2 by decision, 1 by submission. Like, that's it. So maybe you go the way that burned us last week. You go Andre Fajardo. No, you'd go the other way. You go Jake Matthews decision only on DraftKings. Do we have a line on that? Would be, yeah. See, they are right. Your plus money, your plus 120 dog is a minus 225 decision only favorite. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get why.
So maybe there's value on Fajardo by knockout at plus 120.
I don't know. I mean, that's really his one path to victory. It's just like I don't envision him getting the victory here. So it's not something that I really would, you know, recommend myself. You know. So, anyways, here as we get onto our next fight, I'm pulling up.
Well, we played
Jake Matthews. Yeah, we said one unit at plus 125. Bam. It's not like there's so many dogs on this card whispering. I don't think it ends up being our biggest dog play, but it is something that we ever wanted to that we did want to get out there. Effie has Fajardo won any decisions? Yes, he does have 2 decision wins in his career, but not really recently in his last fights at all. So
his
and they haven't really been pretty.
No, his last decision win was a majority decision win at Bellator 207 2018. Javier Torres. Mm. A split decision win against AJ Matthews before that. So, and then before that, he was knocked out by Chidi and Jukwani, for whatever that's worth. So,
well, there you go. I mean, it tells me all that you need to know. Really, Jake Matthews is just that guy that I'm going to be going with here. Once again, probably not the biggest of the underdog plays, but had to make sure got that money out because of how close it was to even. Just in case anything happens here, come weigh-in time, like we were hypothesizing. So as we get onto our next fight here, I know. There might be some, you know, sour grapes here for Guru, given our last. We got Kyung Ho Kang versus Danavagari. Now, for one of them, we had a great prediction last time. Chris Gutierrez, I pushed for it. We did great. We got that.
That was awesome.
He was dominating from distance, and then bam, spinning back fist knockout once he kind of got the patterns down.
That was sick.
And it's something we talk about, like, you know, he over-pursues, you know, he overthrows, he's faced guys that don't have good striking defense. That's why Bakari, you know. So that's where, once again, we get into a fight here with Kyung Ho Kang. We're looking at someone that, you know, on paper, very similar from a number standpoint. But I just think that we've seen Kang show a much more disciplined approach from distance on the feet. I think that he's got, you know, I think the things that were so frustrating is Hanayaya were.
I think, honestly, before you even get into that, I think the things that were frustrating are a serious problem. And I think that there's something that you absolutely need to consider when betting on this fight.
So what is the serious problem?
He has a low fight IQ.
Damn it.
That's it. It's that simple. You have to consider it. It's there. It's glaring. You know what I mean? He starts the fight. You're training for months for Rani Yaya because the fight was about to happen and then it was canceled and rebooked like 4 months later when everybody forgot about it. So you're prepared for Rani Yaya for like nearly a year and you open up with a flying knee against the wrestler. He just wants to take you down.
what does he do when you throw the flying knee? Oh, you really got him, bro. You hit him right in the chest with that flying knee. Great. You put it right on his ass. Great. And then, okay, and start to round two. He throws an inside, a fucking outside leg kick. Whoa, he pushed me. He goes right down on his ass. And what does he do? He pulls guard. He wraps his legs around the guy instead of immediately. So I don't even do jujitsu. Immediately searching for butterfly guard and trying to get up. You get up. It's a shark. Get out of the ocean. Get up. No.
Yeah. So no. I get what you're saying, Guru. I get what you're saying. But that.
But
was
there's more. But there's more.
Oh, but there's more. Is there, more?
You go. But there's so many more instances of the fight IQ. That's why it's a serious problem.
Right, so I get it, but we're looking at Denan Bakary. We're not looking at someone that's
gonna grapple with him, and that's the point. But I think that. I just think that the fight IQ can come into because it's where I want because this is what I'm talking about, because I want to play him here because you'd think that he's got similar striking, right? Or maybe let's just say it's even on the feet, you know. You have somebody in Kang who wants to mix in the grappling and is way more experienced in the UFC, right? And you look at Bakary, all his wins are by finish. And Kang, while he's got a ton of losses, his only loss by finish is by submission. You don't knock out this guy. He's got one loss by knockout, but when was it? It was a million years ago. Yeah, a soccer kick knockout in 2008. Okay? You can't even do a soccer kick in the UFC. So I'm not really worried about that. You don't knock this guy out. So from that standpoint, right? Like, you're not thinking that Bakary is going to knock this guy out. That being said, the UFC loves to have the first time things ever happen to these people. So this shit happens. It's a fucking fight. But that's the point, is that with the fight IQ, like, that he's 34, like, and Bakary's 33. Like, it's just, you can't trust him. So while I lean Kang, and Bakary, by the way, as of note, has been a favorite in all six of his UFC fights. All of them, every single one, okay, including this one. You know what I mean? Like, I'm on the dog here because I just don't, I'm not sold on the Bakary product.
Okay. All right, Guru. I see you coming around with me here.
But I couldn't highlight enough how much I'm not sold on the Kang product. So
I get it. It's just Bakary, you know, 2 inches shorter, 3 inches less reach for a guy that is 100% going to be relying on his striking. And if for some reason he decides this is the first fight where I'm going to start shooting some takedowns, he might have like initial success, you know, catching him off guard, stuff like that. But Kang, you know, what he goes to do to try to reverse and try to do certain stuff early in the fight against Yaya, and Yaya just wears you down. And the type of pressure he puts on is insane. There's a reason that he's, you know, former champion. No. So I just feel like, you know, Kang getting a step down here. Bakary coming 1.5 months off of getting knocked the fuck out also. Super short comeback. And Kang has shown a lot with his hands. He's shown a lot of kickboxing. And I just think that he's got that overall more diverse game plan. So you're right. Boom. Yeah, there's going to be some money going out, you know, on Kyung Ho Kang as well. And that's the way I'm feeling about it.
I'm sorry. Who did you say was former champion?
Am I so wrong about that? No, I was thinking about Henan Barra, which is so stupid.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about, you know,
I was like, where am I?
I'm sorry. That's disappointing, but still, of grappling.
Yeah, for, wow. No, that's cool. I mean, listen, you pointed to Henan Barra right away, so, and you're in the right weight class, so it's really not that egregious.
It was like the first names that start with the R, and then the last name that's five letters, and they're both really good and grapplers, and kind of fell off, but one's making their comeback. Anywho, Yeah, Kyung Ho Kong plus money. Bam.
Yeah,
we're hitting it. Plus 120.
We are hitting it. I'm hitting it with grandma's couch cushions. I don't know how hard we're hitting it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I mean, it seems like both of us are on that side, and that's generally where you end up seeing, at least even if it's just a little half unit play compared to our Jake Matthews full unit. That's one of those ones where it does feel like it's the side, and you're getting the plus money. This one,
similarly,
Leung Na versus Silvana Gomez.
I'm an athlete.
We got Dirty Reg jumping in the chat here. Fialho finds the connection to me. His hands mighty sharp. Totally could see that.
Plus 120. Hit. Go for it.
Yeah. For that knockout, you might as well if you're on that Fialho side, because that would be how he gets it done. So in our second to last fight that we got to break down here, we got Leung Na versus Silvana Gomez Juarez.
I also think he gets it done early, by the way. Like, if you really want to get crazy, I think you're betting Fialho by knockout round 1 and 2, like whichever way your books kind of let you play that. I think he'd get the finish early. Sorry.
No, I mean, that is, if you're on the Fialho side, that's what you're playing. I'm just not.
Yeah, so, no, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to, definitely.
I mean, shout out Dirty Reg hopping in the chat. We appreciate you, Doug.
Absolutely.
So we got Leung Na and Silvana Gomez Juarez. Leung Na is going to be the bigger fighter. She's going to be 12 years younger. And also, she's got 9 submission wins on her record. And our friend Silvana Gomez Juarez has just shown us at the UFC level, both of her losses are by submission.
Yo, is there a greasy sub prop? What is it? I already need to know.
Yeah,
they don't have it. Those bastards.
Yeah, yeah, they're too afraid to let us hit our greasy sub early in the week right now, because that's what I'm waiting on. I need the line. I need my greasy sub prop on Leung Na, and also +130. +130 in this spot. Silvana Gomez Juarez was brought in as one of those short notice replacement.
Dude, that line. Fighters. Wait a minute. So FanDuel -166, +130. DraftKings -145, +125. I think they see what we're starting to see.
Guru.
I think we might need to hit it.
So yeah.
Almost out of principle, we have to hit it, not because we love it so much. I mean, you're gonna break it down, but like, I feel like it's like a half unit, like to actually like literally track and see how we feel about this kind of shit.
Yeah, I feel like for this fight, I want that under 1.5, because it's +100, which is kind of crazy for like this division. But
yeah, you're kind of crazy, dude.
I could totally see her getting cut if she loses, but this would be her third UFC fight. So I think they're going to give her one more, just because it's generally a 4-fight contract. And that's like the back against the wall spot. So would she get a win there? But I do agree, she's going to be in a very bad spot here. And I do think that she ultimately loses. Like Leung Na, yeah, she looked like real bad against Carnelosi as that fight went on. But like from a physicality standpoint, from a cardio, from a durability standpoint, Carnelosi's got it, but Guru, what you got?
No, dude, it's who has those books where you can bet the fucking submission? Dude, she has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. She has 6 armbar wins, Leung Na does.
So that's...
guess what her last 2 fucking sub losses were? Armbar. The UFC loves doing this. You have a hole? Let's see if you've worked on it yet. Oh, you just fought this guy, this gal? Let's give you the one that's just like him, but just a little bit more this with a little bit more that. They do that shit all the time. They're doing it here. Oh, you like to get armbarred? Here's a girl that loves to do armbars. I'm telling you.
Yeah, also, she's not going to hesitate to go after those takedowns. The second that Leung Na comes out, I mean, she was 3 out of 4 on takedowns against Carnelosi, and that's barely more than a round.
She came out, like, think about that fight. The crowd was going wild. That was the first fight back in an arena from COVID. Everybody was going crazy. It takes 2 to tango. It wasn't just Carnelosi that made that fight fire. It was also Leung Na. So you know what I'm saying? You're going to come forward like that, and you're not afraid of the tank that's Carnelosi? You think you're gonna be afraid of Gomez Suarez's striking? I don't think so. Vanessa Demopoulos wasn't.
No, well, I mean, she also got fucking dropped.
Well, she's also fearless. That's true.
Yeah, I do think if you know she's willing to stand a distance early and trade, like, yeah, it's gonna be a problem. But I just don't think that's what Nod does at all. And the other thing is that when she made her debut, her coaches had visa issues and weren't able to get across. So Song Yadong was actually in her quarter last second helping her out. But, like, you know, it's unfamiliar all around. So I think this time around, she's going to be a lot closer to home. It's going to be a lot better situation overall. And she's shown explosion. And there's a reason why the UFC brought her on to start with. And a lot of her losses have really come to names that you recognize, like Agapova, Juliana Velasquez, Lilia Shakarova, Carnelosi. Like, those are all legit names when you start talking about who she's actually lost to. So
And just so we're sure, Gomez Juarez still trading out of Interim Gym just now without Moreno there? Is that still true?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so she's in Mexico, right?
Yeah, flying.
Flying. And very far. Mexico is even further than Florida, guys.
Yep.
To get to where you need to go. So that's an even further flight. It's another 24-hour flight.
Yep. Yep. So to keep that trend going alive, yeah, there we go. That's what we're thinking. And now we finally did it, guys. Here we go. We're at the card opener as we reorient ourselves. it's Jocelyn Edwards and Ramona Pascual. And this fight, interestingly enough, we got it at 145. I know I have bantamweight as the divisions. That's got to be fixed. Yeah, this fight is at 145. So, Pascual made her debut at 145 on short notice.
I thought you meant
she
the line. She
has fought 145, and she's staying at 145. And now, you know, right now we got the line is Jocelyn Edwards minus 160 and Pascual plus 140. I think that as any action hops in here, like the dog again here. That's, you know, we're talking about a stylistic matchup. If this fight stays on the feet at distance, Jocelyn Edwards wins. It's very clear. It's very simple. If this fight ends up on the mat and Ramona Pascual is able to land two takedowns, that's all it's going to take. Ramona Pascual wins the fight. So if you're telling me that those are the two options, that's how the fight's going to play out, which fighter's price will plus 140? Because I'm going to take them. And boom, there you go. Ramona Pascual, the grappler. That's another thing that you like to lean on. And two, they're traveling just about the same distance as we look, you know, Vegas, there you go. They're both coming from the same spot, working out of the PEI and working out of Syndicate. So, yeah, wow. I just think, yeah, I mean, if anything, all three of us could take down Edwards. Yes. Talk about like wacky, wavy, inflatable arm guy. Yeah, she's
flailing
like,
tube man. Yeah, wacky, waving, inflatable arm, flailing tube man. Wacky, waving, inflatable arm, flailing tube man.
So, yeah, it's just not going to be ideal if Pascual is able to get in on those hips. That's just – and that's probably what's going to happen.
TB wants to get in on those hips. But speaking of which, honestly, shout out to Eric Betts Fights. Total simp for Ramona Pascual. I was doing tape for her for the last fight. I'm like, dude, she's cute. And TB's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, dude, I'm telling you. Not that you didn't agree per se. It's just like you're like
no, you were just being you were like over obsessing. Nah,
well, I don't know about that. I was just more surprised. I was like, damn, she's actually anyway. But regardless, not necessarily a fight that I'm even looking to dive into grandma's couch cushions for. I'll just be excited for the day at that point. So I'm not looking to bet anything. But you know, I think that. Jocelyn Edwards, right? Like you said so appropriately. I think that Jocelyn Edwards can you know keep her, you know, if she wants, she's gonna want to keep her on the feet, and continue to piece her up there. It's whether or not she can hold her there. One of the things I find super interesting is that Ramona Pascual has been at Syndicate. Syndicate doesn't necessarily get the best rap per se, have the best win loss percentage in the UFC, at least from what I've seen, and. We've seen Jocelyn Edwards train very closely, very one-on-one with Valentina Shevchenko, Antonina Shevchenko, and somebody else. But I mean, those are the two big ones.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean, that's
yeah.
That's
so kind I of... mean, if anything, you know, it looks like it might be Pascual, but There you go, guys. I mean, we've made it to the end here. We did a little earlier start time today. Hope you guys enjoyed that part. You know, thanks for joining us. And, you know, make sure you're following us. We had a few plays out early, already beat a little line movement. We're going to be throwing down a few more. So make sure you guys are, you know, staying tuned.
Hope you're enjoying the playoff beard for the Rangers. I'm not sure how much longer it's going to last. I'm really hoping they can, you know, we haven't lost at home yet. So I think that's, you know, the most important thing. You just, you know, you wonder how long that's, I'm so negative sometimes. I just wonder how long that kind of streak can last. But I think they can do it. Like, let's go, baby. Game five tomorrow at the Garden. I wish I was there, but I mean, I'll be there in spirit. Listen, make sure you are following us, man. Subscribe, like, share it around. Really, really appreciate that. Really appreciate you all, you know, popping in the chat. You can follow me at Guru Scouting MMA, Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, Tapology, my awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA, Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, Tapology. Next week, right? We're back. You know, we cannot get tired here because we've got like 10 weeks in a row or something nuts. Next week we go to Austin, Texas for Calvin Kattar taking on Josh Emmett in what's going to be a really, really sick card. Like, I think they went out of their way to stack this one very similar to, almost similar to like a pay-per-view style stacking because of the live crowd they're going to put it in front of there in Austin. They love to put up for Texas.
Hell yeah. Well, make sure you guys join us next week as we break that one down and make.
Yeah, we got a special guest next week. We got Dan Levy, best fight picks. So he's an awesome guy. So we really can't wait to have him on. He's a returning guest. So right, we're gonna let you go before I keep rambling. So you guys take care, and we'll see you next time.